So talk today about some research that we did on the spontaneous appearance of polyploids in cucumber, and this represents the PhD work of a student in the lab, Axel Ramirez, and working with Yishuin Wang at the University of Wisconsin. So the problem, growers have noticed off-type plants in highly inbred or hybrid cucumbers, and they generally appear like this. We see shorter stature. The plant's much shorter than the others in the population, and as I said, this is inbred or hybrid material. Markedly serrated leaves on this shorter plants, and then they produce unmarketable fruit. And this fruit type here is Bait Alpha, very commonly grown and consumed in the Middle East, and you can see that the polyploid cucumber here on your left is off-type and can't be sold. For most cucumbers that are grown in the field, you would never notice these plants necessarily, but they do cause economically significant losses for the European Gynaecious parthenocarpic cucumber. This is the one you see in the market that's shrink-wrapped in the plastic. These are high-value plants. They remain in production under controlled environments for over a year, and then they're harvested many times. And a single seed routinely costs more than $1, so there's a big cost associated not only with the seed, but with the glasshouse productions. And growers have noticed a varying frequency of these off-type plants and then threatened lawsuits to the companies. Well, we got some of these off-type plants from commercial growers, and my colleague, Yishuin Wang, made propagules and counted root tips and looked at chromosome number and found that at least some of them were tetraploid. And so they're, whereas cucumber normally is diploid with 14 chromosomes, if you care to count the number of little white dots there, there happens to be 28, meaning that this is a tetraploid. So there are numerous ways naturally that tetraploids will arise in populations. Two main ways are restitution gametes or endoreduplication. Restitution gametes are the failure of meiosis 1 or meiosis 2, so that either the egg or the sperm cell is carrying the chromosome number of the sporophyte. And then endoreduplication occurs routinely in plants, and that's a failure of a mitotic division that produces a nuclei of 4X, 8X, 16, so doubles in the chromosome numbers. And then this can occur at different times, and then they can revert back to lower ploidy through chromosome losses. So these are two likely mechanisms that would give rise to these spontaneous polyploids. So the experiment that Axel did was very simple. Took inbred and double haploid cucumber populations, so we're dealing with highly inbred backgrounds. We produced seed in both the field and glasshouse, trying to look at different seed productions. The glasshouse or greenhouse production was in the summer when it's hot. The only time of the year it's hot in Madison, but it is hot. And then in the field using cages and bees. We measured seed and cotyledon sizes to see if there were any of these attributes that we could use to predict the eventual polyploidy. Progeny plants were grown in the greenhouse, and then the second, fourth, sixth, and sometimes eighth, tenth, and twelfth leaf was harvested, and then ploidy determined by flow cytometry. So from the seeds that we had produced across these environments in these inbred materials, individual seeds were weighed, and then with Edgar Spaulding's lab at the University of Wisconsin, he has a program that will measure not only the seed width, length, it'll calculate the area and then measure the perimeter around the seed to see if there was any chance that we could predict polyploidy based on seed characteristics. We also, after planting the seed, measured the cotyledon width and length. Then the plants were allowed to develop and grow, and then we sampled the second, fourth, sixth, and then onward, as I said, leaves, and then measured their ploidies. We used flow cytometry. Many of you are probably familiar with this technology. Simply put, the leaf tissue is chopped, filtered, and stained. It runs through a flow cytometric column, and then a laser will shoot through, and then depending on the amount of DNA, you'll get intensity of the signal off. Higher amounts of signal intensity would mean more DNA. The output looks as you see here, where on the x-axis we have fluorescence intensity, and then on the y-axis, the number of nuclei. A diploid plant will have two peaks. This larger one corresponds to the diploid, and then the smaller one corresponds to the G2 phase. And so G1 is diploid. Then you have increase in chromosome number as we approach mitosis. G2 then would have double the amount of DNA, and then it goes through mitosis and goes back. And so you can see here the two peaks that will result from a diploid. So here's an example of cucumber. At the top here is a diploid leaf, and the bottom, as you can see, the serrated tetraploid. And then these are two separate runs on the same day put on top of each other. And then so here in blue is the diploid 2X and 4X peaks, and then the tetraploid is lining up here, 4X and 8X, what we refer to the G1 and G2 stages. Our results, we found no evidence of restitution gametes in any of these materials. We observed ploidies that were not 2, 4, 8, 16, but we intermediate such as 3X, 5X, 6X. Overall, across all the inbred material, all the seeds we looked at, we found 2% spontaneous polyploidy. We observed, and I'll show you these results, chimeric and mosaic plants, chimeric plants having different parts of the plant at different ploidies. We found individual leaves with different ploidies, and then the ploidy changes, increases, and can decrease throughout the development of the plant. So, in all the flow cytometric graphs I'll show you now, this is the standard, which is commercially available, CAF thymocyte nucleus, CTN. Its DNA amount is roughly equivalent to 4X cucumber, tetraploid cucumber, so this would be 2X and 4X, and so this red graph will be in each of the subsequent graphs. So here's an example of a 6X leaf. So again, red here is our standard, and you can see this down here would be primarily broken nuclei, but you can see there's a major peak here right about 6X, and then there'd be a 12X peak that would be off here. You wouldn't see that in this scan. Here's an example of an 8X leaf. Here's again red. Here's the CTN control, and then you can see a large peak right at 8X. Again, in endo reduplication, you would expect 8X because 2, 4, 8, 16. So we found everything in between, too. So, for example, here is a single plant sampled at the 3rd, 5th, 6th, and 10th leaf. And so you can see very clearly at the 3rd leaf stage, it's diploid with the two peaks as expected. Again, CTN is the red control in all of these. At the 5th leaf stage, you can see we're coming up with a significant number of nuclei at inner, not clearly defined, multiple levels. What's going on here probably is that leaf, or the cells that gave rise to that leaf, have gone through a duplication event, and we're losing chromosomes, and it's reverting back to lower ploidies. The next leaf up, this leaf here was the 5th. The next leaf up, the 6th leaf, you can see that it's simplifying. Now we have only two of the three peaks here. And then by the 10th leaf, it's reverted back to the diploid level. So we've gone through the duplication and then chromosome loss. Here's an example of a single leaf that has both 2X, 4X, and 6X, diploid, tetraploid, and hexaploid. So here's a big diploid peak. There's a tetraploid peak here, which could be a 4X or the G2 phase of the 2X. But you can see a peak here, clearly 6X. And then 12X would be out here, so you don't see that. So this duplication events that are undergoing are continuous in the development. Here's an example of a polysomic leaf. So this is a single leaf you're seeing here, and we picked it up because it looks so strange. We have heavy serrations on this side and what would be normal serrations on this side. And then Oxel cut the leaf and split it, and you can see here, on the left side of the leaf, diploid, no evidence of polyploidy. On the other side, you can see a very clear peak in between, and it happens to be a little bit off of 6X, and so probably gone through duplication and chromosome loss, as I said. Conclusions. So overall, across all germplasm, all environments, we found a frequency of about 2% spontaneous polyploidy. And that was consistent across the inbred materials from different genetic backgrounds. there was no clear effect of the seed production environment. So it wasn't an effect of where the seed was produced. Now, recognized producing seed in the field in the greenhouse in Madison, Wisconsin, does not encompass all possible seed production environments, but we didn't see any effect of the seed production environment. Unfortunately, seed and cotyledon sizes were not good predictors of eventual polyploidy, so a seed company can't necessarily sort the seed to get rid of it, and growers can't necessarily pluck out the plants at the cotyledon stage. They have to grow for a while. Ploidy changes throughout the growth. It's an ongoing dynamic process. We find different duplications and then reversions back, and so reversions back to lower ploidy. So this is an ongoing process. So our recommendations to seed companies are, as they may want to consider putting the disclaimer on the seed envelope or the seed packet, that off types may appear due to spontaneous polyploidization, which really can't be predicted at this time, to protect themselves. Growers, unfortunately, I think are going to have to buy the seed, plant it up, and then as soon as they see these shorter stature, heavier serrations, very clear phenotypic difference, pull them out, and then maybe go back to the seller of the seed and say we came up with this level of spontaneous polyploidization. So, acknowledgments just to finish up. All this work was done at the UW Flow Cytometry Lab. Edgar Spaulding at Wisconsin was kind enough to let us use his program to measure the seed parameters. And then funding for this is from an SCRI grant to Yishwen Wang, a USDA ARS, and then Axel Ramirez had support from fellowships from the University of Wisconsin. And that's it, and I have 3 minutes, and so I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have. So. Yes. That's a good question. So the leaves were sampled when they were expanding. So about half expanded, then we would take a cut a piece off of it and chop it. So they were expanding, not old leaves. In the back. So the question was, is since the serration of the leaves is an indication of polyploidy, whether they could remove those leaves? Yeah. The polyploidization event is probably occurring in the meristem, and so it is committed, and then we're just seeing the effect in the leaves. So in the case where you have glasshouse cucumbers and they have that major investment, we're recommending that they remove the plant. Even though it goes to a higher ploidy and reverts back later, it still produces off-type fruits in that interim period. So we're recommending that they're rogued right away. Pinching back and then have a new leaf result from that primordia. And yeah, we never did that. We had seen that once we picked up a polyploidization event, usually the next leaf was polyploid and then it would revert back. It's a possibility. I guess I think most growers would just pull them out. One more question? The question is as you look across the leaves as they develop, what do you see? And is there any, if I understand, left and right and as you go up the plant? We found plants that remain polyploid through all subsequent leaves. Some of them reverted back. It wasn't on one side or the other. It would, and That's my signal. I wish I could figure out how to start this. I guess I'm out of time. So, but yeah, you couldn't make any predictions of the reversion back or if it was stably remained a polyploid. Okay, we got to move on.